This is the Senate Committee on Labor, Consumer, and Business Affairs, meeting in Hearing Room A at 1 o'clock p.m. on March the 2nd, 1977.
A little bit.
Here we are.
Nope, that's not it. It's not in your book.
No, this is.
Sorry, I didn't help you much.
I wasn't paying any attention.
No, that's just. I wasn't sure what was happening.
Kenny pointed out what I should have done, but I was a little dithered by then.
No, it was right out there on top of that packet.
Consistent with the bankruptcy.
Walked over and showed on that.
Is the man Roberts still sitting? Yes.
Well, the subcommittee man.
The meeting will come to order. This is scheduled as a work session on 299 and 301. Before we start, I'm wondering if there's anyone in the audience that wants to testify on either measure. Evidently not. Senator Troll, I believe you were part of a subcommittee that would recommend amendments to 299. Do you want to bring those to our attention at this point?
Well, I think we have them, don't we, here in front of us? I think we've maybe
really thinking of these here.
You should have the amendments. It's
ones that are dated February 21st.
Yeah, dated February 21, 1977. Amendments to Senate Bill 299 adopted by the subcommittee on Senate Bill 299.
It seems to me that we had a couple meetings of the subcommittee, and after the meetings there was unanimity about the amendments, as I recall, and no major disagreement with them. If I'm wrong, I wish somebody would correct me. That's the way you remember it, Mr. Wyman?
Yes.
This was the.
You want to explain the amendments?
Rich here. Yeah, I want it rich.
First of all, I gave you a copy of the minutes of the subcommittee meeting in your book by 299, so you could see who was represented at the subcommittee meeting. As I understand it, there's unanimity among all sides of this. The amendments basically continue the funding of the retroactive reserve at its current level, which is a 6-cent contribution from the employees and a 6-cent contribution by the employer per workman per day or part of the day that is worked. It also includes a repeal of the automatic transfer of the retroactive reserve fund to the administrative fund July 1, 1977. If this is not done, then there is a good question whether the retroactive reserve fund, as far as the employee's 6-cent contribution, would exist after July 1, 77. So in the Section 3 here of the amendments, we're simply dropping out but in no event later than July 1, 1977. There's no other language change. All the rest of the language is existing law. As I said, it does reestablish the the subject employer contribution at 6 cents, which is its current level, and will repeal that contribution July 1, 1979, so that it would have to be looked at again by the next legislature. That's in all that the amendments do.
Well, what's the reference to the 8 cents then?
Okay, the amendment to ORS 656506 is existing law. The only change is that we're bracketing out and deleting in the sentence, if at any time that portion of the funds dedicated to the retroactive reserve are no longer needed for that purpose, but in no event later than July 1, 77. We're taking that out so that there will be, the employee's contribution will be there after July 1, 77.
Mr. Chairman, I think what we're doing really is continuing the status quo for another 2 years.
Just correct.
Shunting it forward for 2 more years.
I would accept a motion on the amendments.
I move the amendments, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Troz has moved the amendments. Is there any opposition?
Mr. Chairman, I presume there was testimony indicating that was by
by virtue of the people that appeared, that it was generally agreed that it was a wise and necessary
yes,
and
I
advisable.
Think so, and I think everyone was convinced who was there, including representatives from the AOI and mm-hmm. others, that this was necessary. Mr. Fredericks is shaking his head back there. So
everybody, all the audience nod their head.
By consensus, right.
Hearing no opposition, I declare the amendments accepted. Would like to make a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chairman, I move the bill to the floor with it. Do pass as amended.
Senator Toll moves Senate Bill 299. Do pass as amendment. Out. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Carson?
Aye.
Senator Drinstead?
Aye.
Senator Crow?
Aye.
Senator Wires?
Aye.
We'll assign that to Senator Groner since he isn't here.
Beautiful. Stack a few of them up. Right.
Wonder.
Let's get a few more out, Mr. Chairman.
Right.
There's a 269 in here that I'd.
Senate Bill 301 is on schedule for work session.
These amendments come from the representatives of the Pacific Power and Light Company and the Oregon Railroad Association. The bill itself will give immunity to all employers who are under the workman's compensation system for third-party actions against them. The point made by PP&L and the Railroad Association is that the type of services they render are at times hazardous, but are essential to the well-being of business people. So they enter into an agreement with those particular businesses in the situation of a spur line, for instance, that if one of their employees is injured by an act of the Railroad Association, for instance, they have signed an agreement where the employer of the hurt workman agrees to allow an indemnity action by the railroad against them to recover whatever their cost of the suit by the employee against the Railroad Association are. There is some question about how widespread these indemnity agreements are in the business world. We've only heard from PP&L and the Oregon Railroad Association. It's hard to assess how many other businesses consider these type of indemnity agreements necessary for the function of their business. But this would prohibit all indemnity actions except in the case of an agreement between PP&L and an employer or the Railroad Association and an employer or the various railroad lines and an employer regulated by separate chapters of ORS 757 and 760 speaking to the regulation of public utilities and railroads.
Question, how do you pin that down to just PP&L? Why wouldn't PGE or any other?
Well, these amendments were suggested by PP&L, but the exemption reads in terms of those associations, corporations, companies regulated by 757 and 760. Okay. So literally all public utilities okay. and all railroads would be covered since they are regulated under those chapters. But I wanted to express that these amendments do come from PP&L and the Railroad Association.
The amendments had the acceptance of the other members of the other groups that participated in the compromise committee.
Who all participated in the conference? Let's find that out.
Basically, those people that I mentioned, Bob Kennedy of the AFL and PP&L and the Oregon Railroad Association.
We're supportive of
these particular amendments. Perhaps Carl Fredericks would have a perspective on this.
We're supportive of these amendments.
discussion on the amendments?
Move the amendments, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Droe moved the proposed amendments to Senate Bill 301. Is there any opposition? Hearing none, the amendments are adopted. What's your pleasure?
Could we, Mr. Chairman, could we have a review of the testimony that we had on the bill itself from the staff?
Sorry.
Rich, would you want to go over that?
Well, the policy behind this bill, I think, is that workman's compensation was designed as a sole remedy, no-fault sole remedy type of compensation for employers, but employers have found themselves in the position of being liable both under the workman's compensation system to the employee and also liable for third-party actions by a third party who was being sued by that person's employee and recovered. The third party would then sue the employer in a civil action and recover in a civil action, so that the employer covered by workman's compensation would both be liable under workman's compensation and also civilly by an indemnity or a contribution type action from the real tortfeasor, who would be a third party in this, and the workman of the employer would have recovered from the third party tortfeasor. I think the policy is that is based upon the concept of workman's compensation as a sole and exclusive remedy.
But under certain circumstances, we do allow the injured workman to sue the third party.
Oh, yeah.
He'll have the right of action against the third party, yeah, regardless of this
we're
bill.
We're not going to let that third party then come back against the employer.
That's what this bill would do. Of course, in the case of the railroads, they're not covered by workman's compensation anyway. They're in a federal act, so they're totally outside the compensation system.
Well, not saying that I'm, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Wyers.
I don't want to vote on this because it's consistent with some general policy of the workman's compensation law. Because when your generality hits a certain point, then it almost gets too general. Me. So I'm not saying I'm against this. I'm just trying to sort my thoughts through. Maybe someone else on the committee can help me when I shut up. But it seems to me that I don't quite see yet how we're helping the world by saying that this. I think I understand what we're talking about, and that is saying that if somebody comes around where a worker is working and hurts him, and the worker is able to recover against that outsider, let's call him rather than third party, he's able to recover against that outsider. Maybe it's somebody driving onto the job site. I can't quite remember the case law. I've studied the case law in this area as a student, and there are situations where outsiders are not considered third parties, and you can't sue separately. But there are situations where you can. So I'm not sure this is a good example, but a worker's working on a construction job, and somebody comes in there from another outfit with a truck and runs over him. Then the man can recover workman's compensation, but he can also sue that truck driver or that truck driver's company because it wasn't his employer. It's an outsider or a third party. Now, this law, if we pass this act, then we would say that the owner of that truck or the truck driver himself can't come back against the workman's employer to recover money that he lost. And I suppose there's another layer in this, and that is that it will get down to what insurance companies, whose insurance company can do what in terms of straightening out their liabilities. I can't see any reason on the surface of why I should be against it, but I can't see any particular reason why I would be for it either, because it...
I might interject.
For the outsider to come back against the injured workman's original employer, he'd have to show that somehow the original employer was at fault, and that's why he ran over the guy. He wouldn't be able to just come back against him automatically. I've laid out my state of my confusion.
You might if you have time.
I might interject that there's a similar bill that does essentially the same thing in House Judiciary Committee, and it's being studied there. It also, subsection B of that new language would void all agreements and warranties contrary to the provisions of the paragraph. It is my impression that many companies do use a boilerplate indemnity type of agreement when they enter into contracts with other businesses. And so I think one effect on this is speaking to how valid those boilerplate indemnity agreements are going to be. It would void them except in the case of public utilities and railroads, as I read the bill with the amendments.
Chairman?
Senator Carson.
I share Senator Wire's confusion or concern. From a drafting standpoint, we have a double negative, if not a third negative, if I understand correctly. In other words, the whole sense of 656.018 is a negative, is an exemption, if you will. So is the, in effect, that if you provide it under 656.017, then you're exempted from the provisions. Am I correct so far, Richard?
Well, it states that workman's comp is an exclusive liability.
So they're exempted from the third-party aspect? Is that the thrust of it?
Yes, specifically including third-party or outside actions for contribution or indemnity.
I'll put it this way. Normally, you're responsible.
Right.
You're responsible. Okay. Except if you've got workman's comp, then you're not responsible. In other words, that's the thrust of unamended.
Yeah, if you're under workman's comp, you're a subject employer, you're exempted from all other actions, including actions for indemnity and contributions from an outside or third party source.
Now we're adding an exemption to that exemption. Is that not?
No, that's what the bill does. Currently, there is an action for contribution or indemnity. Currently, it is possible to sue an employer who is subject to workman's compensation. It is possible for an outsider to sue that employer for contribution or indemnity in an arising out of a tort situation that they themselves have been sued for.
What does the amendment we just adopted do to this exemption?
It would allow railroads and public utilities to continue writing indemnity provisions in their contract, which would allow them to come against the other employer and get the money back that they might be out in a civil suit. The justification for that was that many times railroads have to do hazardous things such as spur lines that are essential to a person's business, and the railroad, they do a kind of an equitable trade. Okay, we know this is hazardous, we'll put it in, but we want ourselves covered by an indemnity agreement with you where we can sue you or recover money that we may be out in a tort action by one of your employees.
Well, the point I was trying to reach was that I guess a drafting standpoint, and that is that you've got, for instance, it will now read, except as specifically provided otherwise in such and such, provided this section shall not apply. And it just seems to me to be a double, if not a triple negative, and you'd either have to be working in workman's comp full time or be a magician to fully understand it. The second question I have is, I'm not familiar with any other time where we have ever made an act effective as to trials, not claims made, not injuries suffered, whatever, but what happens if you're in the midst of a trial and all actions tried subsequent? I'm looking at Section 2, Mr. Chairman. And I think it's important that we do put in some beginning date or ending date, but I wonder if it's wise to select the trial date as opposed to the injury date or the filing date. The trial is, you just hope you file the thing in Polk County rather than Multnomah, because the trial docket's a lot shorter in Polk than it is in Multnomah. And I think that's a bad place to leave it. Does anybody know why they use trial date? Can I ask Carl?
The House bill is 2202, and that was sponsored by the Oregon State Bar, and they did make an amendment to accept the change to the filing date.
Well, I thank you for the compliment, but it's really kind of obvious. It would be almost impossible to administer fairly by hooking it to this.
It wasn't too obvious because both bills coming from different groups actually had the same thing.
No.
Do you have any other comments?
Well, but your pleasure.
Well, Mr. Chairman, can I ask Richard, is there any possibility or any advisability, I guess, of stating this in English directly rather than having it to the negative the third power? And I realize that's not your fault, but I think part of our confusion is directed the way it's drafted, which is not your fault, or it's our previous statute, and then another provided.
Senator Carson, have you time to work with Rich? If I had adjourned this meeting, could you two work together for 15 or 20 minutes on this?
Sure.
We could take it up the first thing Friday, another work session. Is that all right?
Sure.
All right. Meeting's adjourned.